Welcome to Prima's 2024 podcast series. My name is Shonda Ragland. I am the Senior Director of Education and Training at Prima. On this Prima podcast, Leslie Witten will discuss Confessions of a High-Functioning Professional with Chronic Anxiety. Leslie is a partner at Chartwell Law. We will also be joined by Prima's Education Coordinator, Taekwon Gilbert. Taekwon will moderate the discussion. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for joining us today, Leslie.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, for starters, I see that you're an attorney and not a psychologist. What is your experience with anxiety, and why do you think your experiences are useful to others?
Sure. So, I've had anxiety for as long as I can remember. I just always assumed I had generalized anxiety disorder, even though I was never diagnosed with it. Just always anxious. And I think it helped me a lot because it made me very driven, and you know, I always had to get all A's and that kind of stuff, but still something I lived with for a long time. And as I got older, it got a little bit worse, and I started just trying different things like, you know, yoga and other exercises and that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of stuff that really helped me. But the thing that helped me the most was actually a complete accident. I have been perimenopausal for a couple of years, which is super fun. And part of what comes with that is like this just really increased appetite. And I've always struggled with weight issues too. And so my doctor gave me a medication that did help me lose a lot of weight, but it really increased my anxiety. And then that medication I could only be on for a few months. And so then I got switched to Contrave. And that's something I can take for a long time. And Contrave has Wellbutrin in it. And Wellbutrin is supposed to, at least when it's in Contrave, help with, you know, like if you really love pizza, not caring about it, like that kind of thing. And it hasn't really done that for me. But what I did notice is that it significantly helped my anxiety. And I was in Disney World with my husband. And I've always been like, go, go, go at every vacation. Like we just always have to go accomplish. And I would always get very annoyed when people would be slow in front of me or cut in line or talk during a movie or a show or something. And we were sitting at Disney this past time, and this little girl behind me, when Tinkerbell came on the screen, she just said, "Oh, look, it's Tinkerbell." And I immediately just smiled and thought how cute that was. And that's when it really hit me how much this Wellbutrin has helped me. And just things like just impatience for no reason, anxiety for no reason, those things are gone. And I'm certainly not recommending that everyone who has anxiety go out and get Contrave or Wellbutrin. But what I am saying is that I think because it's something I never would have tried, I never would have asked for, I think it's something that we should discuss. I think there's a stigma in the U.S. at least about getting any sort of help for mental health issues, getting on any sort of medication, and it can be life-changing and it can be make you a better person for other people too. So,
so what are some things that work for you in combating anxiety?
So I did a lot of research. I love research. The first thing is going to sound really silly, but there is a movie called Encanto. It's a Disney movie for those who haven't seen it. And there's a character who is very stressed, and she has this song, and just these lyrics made me think, and I'm going to get into other things that worked for me, but I just wanted to share these lyrics because they, I think they specifically can apply to risk managers. But it says, "Under the surface, I hide my nerves and it worsens. I worry something is going to hurt us. Under the surface, the ship doesn't swerve as it heard how big the iceberg is. Under the surface, I think about my purpose. Can I somehow preserve this? Line up the dominoes. A light wind blows. You try to stop it tumbling, but on and on it goes. Watch as she buckles and bends, but never breaks. No mistakes. Give it to your sister and never wonder if the same pressure would have pulled you under. Who am I if I don't have what it takes? No cracks, no breaks, no mistakes, no pressure." When I first heard that song, I thought, oh, that's me. And then I realized, you know, it's probably everyone. Like, everyone probably has that to some extent or another. And particularly risk managers. And I think the first thing we learn from something like that is to just give yourself a break. And I think that's true with diet too. I mean, I think obviously eating healthy can be so useful, and I'll get into that a little more later with anxiety, but I just think things where you, at least for me, when you cut out something entirely from your diet, that's kind of the only thing that you want. And so what I've learned really works for me is saying yes and. So it's kind of like the improv rule. You say yes, and then you add to whatever the other person says. I think, you know, if you really want Oreos, eat Oreos, but also eat things that are going to be healthy and sate your appetite, nuts, yogurt, fruit, you know, those sorts of things. So I think that's just the first thing, is just try to figure out a way to incorporate the things that you enjoy, and don't just try to cut all of it out, because that's just, it's going to cause more anxiety, I think. And life is too short. There's actually a book, and then I'll get off the diet stuff, but there's a book called Why Calories Don't Count, How We Got the Science of Weight Loss Wrong, by Dr. Giles Yeo. And he was on a podcast, for those interested. I thought it was life-changing. It's called The Diary of a CEO with Stephen Bartlett, and it's episode 218 of his podcast. And what Dr. Yeo says is that it's not what we think. Like, we think of diets as just being about just changing, and you should be fine. You should just eat less. It'll be fine. And what he said that really got to me is that it's not, there's no such thing as a diet that is perfect, or that, like, you know, you cut out this thing, or you drink lemon water in the morning, or none of that. And the reason most diets don't work is because people go on them and then they go back to eating normally again. And even if they're not eating a lot of calories, their brain, when they were losing weight, got nervous that they were about to die. And so when they went off the diet, the brain said, oh, we have to quickly get back to where we were before. So in a way, we're fighting against what's in our head. So anyway, I highly recommend that for anybody who struggles with weight issues at all. But moving on, other things that worked for me in combating anxiety, a big one was yoga. And again, that's something that I never would have done on my own. I just thought, I'm not flexible. And it's like, is this a weird religious thing or something? And it's really not. And I only found it because a few years ago I was having neck and shoulder pain, because that's where I carry my stress. It's where a lot of people carry stress. And I was just looking on YouTube for stretches for the neck and the shoulder. And I came across Yoga with Adrienne, and just started slowly and slowly doing more and more of those videos, and just figuring out that every time I did yoga, I felt better. And so I do it every single day now. And I'm certainly not saying that you need to do that, but it's something that absolutely worked for me. And another thing, one more little thing about weight loss, is exercise cannot be about weight loss. It has to be about being stronger or healthier or combating anxiety or something like that, because it honestly doesn't do that much for weight loss. It might help you maintain your weight, but it doesn't have that big of an impact, but it's so great for other things. Another thing that has been super helpful is getting more sunlight. Just going outside, even if you don't do anything, just sit on a bench for a while, that can make a huge difference. Breathing exercises have been very, very useful for me. Meditation is, again, something I never thought I would have done, but has been very, very helpful. Again, I would tell just people, just don't rule out medications. Just don't decide that you're not even going to think about it. Maybe talk to your doctor about it. And then just things that are so much easier said than done, like letting go of the need to control other people and trying to be in the moment and not agonizing about what's going to happen later. And my sister is a therapist at the Department of Mental Health, and I showed her this list, and she added cold water. She said that's a technique she gives to a lot of her patients, is if you are just really anxious in the moment, just go splash some cold water on your face, and that can really bring everything down, and just cold in general. But if you just need a quick thing, just splashing cold water on your face can really help.
You alluded to breathing exercises. Can you provide some examples or anything that can, for example, be done in the middle of a stressful board meeting?
So there's kind of both. I mean, for the board meeting, I would start with pranayama, and all that means, it's just a yoga term, but all it really means is controlled breathing, so that you breathe in for a certain amount of time, you retain the breath for a certain amount of time, and then you exhale for a certain amount of counts. So Very common one is box breathing. My sister, again, uses this also with her patients. And all that is you inhale to the count of four, retain the breath for four, breathe out for the count of four, and then hold at the bottom for four. So it's just four, 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 four. And that's something you can do that can be very, very subtle, that you just breathe in and out of your nose. Make sure you're breathing from your diaphragm and not from your chest, like when you pull your shoulders up really high. And that can really make a difference, and no one has to know anything about it. And then there are just tons of other ones where you inhale for four, three, two, one, hold six, five, four, three, two, one, and exhale for eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one. And if anyone did that and was unable to make it all the way to eight exhaling, that is completely normal and that's completely okay. But it's just one of those things that I have found for me, especially, that exhaling for longer than you inhale can really make a big difference. And then there are all kinds of breathing exercises you can do if you just have a few minutes to yourself. One is silly, but it's just horsey lips, where you just go with your lips. One is breath of fire. I really like this one. It's, you can just put your fist on your stomach and just kind of feel your stomach going in and out, in and out. And you just exhale in short bursts, and the inhale is passive. So it's like, and that will drive your pets crazy, but it is very, very helpful. And if you can do it for 30 seconds or a minute, it can really help. There's alternate nostril breathing, which is just you put a thumb over one nostril and you inhale, you switch to putting a finger over the other nostril, and then you exhale, then you inhale, and then you switch again. So it's just a back and forth like that. And one of my favorites is called ocean breath, or Ujjayi breath. And it's kind of like a Darth Vader thing, where you're just, your mouth is closed and you're breathing from the back of your throat. So it's like, you kind of feel like an ocean, like you can imagine an ocean ebbing and flowing sort of situation. And I found that very helpful too. Obviously the last ones I mentioned, you probably can't do in the middle of a board meeting, but if you have a few minutes beforehand, maybe.
What can you recommend for people who say they can't turn their brains off to meditate?
Oh, well, the first thing I would say is, of course you can't. Like, there's actually a Forbes article by somebody named David DeSalvo. It's called Your Brain Sees Even When You Don't. And what he says is that we consciously process 40 pieces of information per second. And this one I find very hard to believe, but he said we unconsciously process 11 million pieces of information per second. So, I mean, I don't know if it's that extreme, but it's a lot. We do process a lot more than we realize that we do. So I would say, first of all, nobody can. Like, nobody turns their brain off. And it's for me, it's really not about that. There is a great show that a lot of people won't watch because it's a cartoon, but it's called Bob's Burgers. And there's an episode where I think they describe meditation perfectly, but basically it's just closing your eyes so you shut out a lot of those pieces of information that would be coming in, and just breathe. And you're going to think of things, and that is 100% fine. And then you just, you know, very kindly wave at them as they pass by, and then go back to the breath. And if you never get away from that, if you're constantly thinking about stuff the whole time, that is okay. You will still get some benefit. There's a book called Bliss More by Light Watkins, where he talks about the easy method of meditation. And he recommends, first of all, not sitting in the lotus position on the beach with your back straight. Like, that's not going to help you all that much. But being comfortable, maybe not laying down because you might fall asleep. And by the way, if you fall asleep when you're meditating, your body might just be telling you have to fall asleep. But the idea is you just get comfortable in a seat, and then EASY just stands for embrace, accept, surrender, yield. And obviously those are all synonyms, but it's just where you just take a minute and just whatever happens. If somebody comes in and talks to you, if there's a dog barking outside, like whatever it is, you just accept that as the soundtrack for your meditation and let it be. And I think if we can, it's again, just the letting go idea. If we can just slow down for a minute, that is so helpful. And for me, more than anything, because I am a very anxious person. I'm very responsive to people. When they email me, I want to respond immediately. It helps me tremendously to turn off all my devices and just breathe for 5 minutes and just not answer an email, not answer a phone call, not hear them going off. And that can make just such a huge difference in the rest of your day, and it can help you sleep.
Kind of alluded to this, but a lot of people with anxiety have issues falling asleep. Do you have any guidance for better sleep?
Yeah. So a good friend of mine told me this, and she's a woman, and I have noticed that women in general, very, very generally, have more issues sleeping than men do. And I think it's because of what my friend told me, which is that we're boxes and wires. And what she meant by that is that men think like boxes. They have work, they have home, they have sports. Every aspect of their life is a different thing, and they're separate from each other. Whereas for women, we're wired. Everything is connected, which is why a lot of us, definitely putting myself in that category, when we get upset with our spouse about one thing, we end up getting upset about everything because all of it's connected. And that's, I think, why a lot of women have so much difficulty sleeping, is because you just lay down and you start thinking about what you have to do tomorrow. And that leads to something with your kids. Like, it's just a whole thing. So first is to recognize that. There is a great masterclass, if anyone pays for a subscription to that, called The Science of Sleep. And he talks about that everyone has a 24-hour circadian rhythm that dictates when you are supposed to sleep or when your body wants you to sleep. We have a compound in us, or a substance that occurs naturally in us, called adenosine. And that builds up throughout the day. And when it builds up to its peak, we're supposed to be sleepy and go to sleep. I would note that the 24-hour rhythm is not the same for everybody. It can change over your lifetime, which is why, you know, a lot of teenagers will sleep until noon. I remember sleeping until noon as a teenager. I could never do that now. And that's just because your circadian rhythm is different. It's not that they're lazy. It's just that that's when their body is telling them to sleep. A couple other things that he said that were really interesting was sleeping pills and alcohol will absolutely help you go to sleep, but you're not going to get the restful kind of sleep that you would if you can figure out how to fall asleep naturally, because they're going to keep you from having that REM sleep, the really restful kind of sleep. Another thing is caffeine. Now, I mean, I can't drink caffeine afternoon, or I'm just absolutely not going to sleep that night, but there, I know plenty of people who do, who will, you know, have coffee after dinner or whatever. And those people may say, I have no issue falling asleep on caffeine. And that may very well be true, but you're also, because of caffeine and the way it works in your body, not going to get the deep, restful REM sleep that you would have otherwise. So I'm not saying never drink coffee after dinner. I'm just saying it's just something to keep in mind. Oh, and by the way, before I get into some more other tips that I've just found, what's so scary for me is, well, not for me, but for everyone, when you don't sleep, of course, you're going to be more emotional. You're going to react in ways that you maybe wouldn't have if you'd gotten enough sleep. Of course, you won't be as alert. Those things that we know. But one thing I didn't know was that if you don't get enough sleep, your body is going to store the fat in your body and hang on to it because it needs that for energy. So you're going to have a much harder time losing weight. I keep going back to that, I know, but a lot of people have that. And then, you know, just some general tips, and none of this is novel or anything, but getting to sleep and waking up at the same time every day is very useful. So, you know, if you go to bed at 9 on a Tuesday, you should probably try to go to bed at 9 on a Saturday. And it may not always be practical, but that can really help to get your body into, again, your circadian rhythm. Another thing is just to have some wind down time. So just turn the screens off, maybe take a bath, do some stretches, read, meditate, anything like that. One thing that I honestly haven't tried, but I've seen recommended a lot, is to just take 5 minutes and write down all of the concerns that you had that day, everything that you wish you'd gotten done, something you said you wish you hadn't said. And just the act of writing them down can, according to some studies, show that they can help you not do that when you lay down to go to sleep. Another thing is just to have the room cold. I'm sure most everybody knows that, but if it's hot and you're sweaty, you're not going to get as much sleep as if it's actually colder than you're usually used to. And then, you know, there's just the stigma again of, of people who just naturally their bodies want to sleep till 9. And maybe, like, as a society, I'm not going to change all of the world with this podcast, but maybe as a society, we could just start giving people a break, especially if they work just as hard as everyone else, but at different times. If you want to get a Fitbit or a sleep ring or something like that, that can be really useful. I have an Oura ring. It's O-U-R-A. And, you know, it's not always right. It will say that I slept 8 hours when I know I didn't. But what it does that I find very useful is it monitors the heart rate and your temperature. And when you get up in the morning, it will tell you, you know, you seem to be doing pretty well. If you want to go for a run today, go for it. Now, I'm not going to do that. I'm not running unless there's a lion chasing me or I'm running toward a cupcake or something. But I'm not generally going to do that. But I could do something more physical than maybe yoga or Pilates or something a little more low key. If I wake up and they say, you know, the app ring says, you know, maybe you should take it easy today. So yeah, hopefully some of those are new to some people.
Definitely new to me. Do you have any more science or anything to back your opinions? And where can we go for more in-depth information on all of this?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, the internet is just such a great tool. And of course, the books that I've already mentioned, but I mean, even just WebMD, there are a lot of articles on WebMD that will, if you notice, have footnotes that will link to scientific studies that are done. And if you really want some more in-depth information, you can just do that. But what I've discovered from just various articles, WebMD, just various things like that, first is, as far as breathing techniques, there's absolutely science behind that. There is science that the anxiety goes down. It helps to do breathing exercises. Breathing exercises also help just with general mindfulness, so just kind of being able to pay attention to what's around you and slow down. Actually, doctors will use breathing techniques with Alzheimer's patients because it really does help with that. As far as diet stuff, there is a Harvard study. Did a study on rats, and they determined that rats whose diets were low in magnesium had more anxiety. So, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be the same for humans, but it's food for thought. And if you want to get more magnesium, that would be like legumes or leafy greens or whole grains. Eating breakfast in some scientific studies has been shown to help. Eating things like fruits and vegetables, you know, just healthy fats like nuts and olive oil. And zinc really helps. So oysters or beef or egg yolks or something like that. What I found very interesting, and I love all these foods, so I'm super excited about it, but asparagus, avocados, and almonds are what they call happy foods, which means that they're going to increase the serotonin and the dopamine in your body, which makes you happy. And so that's obviously going to be kind of the opposite of anxiety. Now for the last bit, for the exercise part, there's just a ton. There is a study, this is another yoga plug, I apologize for those who are anti-yoga, but there was a magazine, the Society of Nuclear Medicine, and they did a study with PET scans, so before and after the activity, and they had people run on a treadmill for 30 minutes, and then they had people do yoga for an hour. The people who did yoga had an increase in dopamine. The people who ran on the treadmill did not. So just something to think about. There's a 2018 study from Ailment Pharmacology Therapeutics. They took 59 patients who had IBS, and they had them do yoga twice a week for 12 weeks. And they concluded that for some reason, and they don't know why, doing that will reduce the symptoms of IBS. And it could very well be because anxiety is a symptom, or it can be a symptom of IBS, and maybe doing yoga can help with that. Lots of other studies about other sorts of exercises, you know, HIIT workouts, boxing, dancing, swimming. And then there are studies that say jogging and running and brisk walking can help as well. And of course, that kind of goes against the whole treadmill study. But I think, and this is just me speculating, but I think the difference is studies about running were done outside. And I think it makes a big difference if you can run outside as opposed to inside on a treadmill. And then there's just, you know, mindfulness exercises where you just go, again, sit outside in the middle of the day and just watch people go by. Or you sit inside and you close your eyes and you just think about your body and everything that's going on and just kind of noticing things, like noticing am I clenching in my feet? Am I like, are there places where I can relax that I haven't? And if so, then try to soften those areas, and that can be really helpful. And I say all this to say that I just really encourage people to try everything, because none of these things are bad for you. And then just do what's best for you, because individuals are not statistics. they're not one of those 59 people in the study, unless they are. But just mental health is so important. And again, I really hope we can take away the stigma of medication. But I think overall, all of this is just about being the best version of ourselves so that we can be better for everyone else.
We've reached the end of our podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please visit the Prima website to hear other Prima podcasts, view upcoming Prima webinars, read Prima blogs, and learn about other Prima educational resources. Be sure to check us out on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and our very own Prima Talk. Have an amazing day.